This segment was first broadcast on the Radio Information Service of Belleville, Illinois.
Hi, everyone. Jim Layton here, and today we're going to be talking with Jim Futcherman. Jim, of course, is best known as his days at Arkenstone. Sold Arkenstone to create the great company Benetech and his project, of course, Bookshare. Joining us is Jim Futcherman. Thank you for joining us, too.
Thank you very much, Jim. Glad to be here.
Thank you, sir. Let's talk about Arkenstone for just a minute or two. Have you ever woke up in the middle of the night and said, what have I done? Did you ever have any second thoughts about selling Arkenstone, or was it time to move on to something else?
Well, I think both is the correct answer to that one. I think that everybody who found something and then transfers it to somebody else has those second thoughts about, you know, I could be running it better and all that. But I think after more than 10 years, it was time to turn it over to somebody fresh and to tackle some new projects, because until we did that, we couldn't really tackle anything new. Running Arkenstone as a break-even nonprofit meant we didn't have any money to try out new things like Bookshare. So I think all in all, I'm happy with the way it worked out.
Are you pleased, displeased, satisfied, not satisfied? What's your thoughts about how Freedom Scientific is running Arkenstone? And have they asked you for any advice?
I think that I'm satisfied. I think that we have continued connections, and for example, we're going to be working with them on making sure that their products support Bookshare.org and so on. I think things are going reasonably well.
So you're pleased so far?
I think they're going reasonably well.
All right, let's move along to Benetech. You sold Arkenstone to create Benetech. Kind of give us an overview. What is the mission, the purpose, the goal of Benetech, and what are you using for support, funding sources to keep the company going?
Okay. Benetech is a charity nonprofit corporation that is the successor to Arkenstone. Essentially, we renamed the nonprofit when we made the sale because one of the things that Freedom Scientific wanted to buy was the Arkenstone name. So we're operating under the new name of Benetech, but our mission is the same. We're trying to take technology, apply it to important needs, such as needs for people with disabilities for technology, build tools that we think other people might not build, or take risks that we think other people might be less inclined to take, and try and bring some new technology. So we have Bookshare.org already launched and operating, but we have a handful of new ventures in our pipeline that we're excited about and we're, you know, working on and raising money for. As far as the money goes, for probably our first couple of years under the Benetech name, we were spending the money we got from the sale of Arkenstone. And this is the first year, 2003, the first year where the bulk of our money is going to not come from that source, because we've spent all that, but instead from fundraising from donors and foundations. And so right now, for example, we're out raising money for Bookshare.org for doing Spanish language collections, doing books for students nationally, doing regional pilots. And so we're out there trying to fill the gap between what it costs to operate Bookshare.org and what we're bringing in terms of revenues, until hopefully in a couple of years the subscription revenues will be enough to pay for the operation and we'll get to break even.
And you're doing other projects with Benetech besides Bookshare. Talk about that for a minute.
Yes, we've been out raising money for a major social justice project called Marnus that we launched earlier this year. So this is for groups that are doing civil rights, human rights work. We're very interested in talking handheld devices. We see used cell phones, Palm Pilots, iPacks, you know, of the next few years as being really exciting platforms for adaptive technology. And so we're busy, you know, we've done some work with Sun Microsystems in this area on the Sonoris project, and we're busy talking to cell phone makers and Palm and other people about how we can make these products more accessible. One of the things I did at Arkenstone was serve on the Section 255 Federal Advisory Committee, which is to make telecom equipment and services more accessible to people with disabilities. It's been a number of years, you know, more than five, and not that much progress. And one of the things that we'd like to do is push that agenda a lot further forward, so that a cell phone comes with, you know, some very inexpensive software that allows it to be fully utilized by a visually impaired person.
Now, on your Benetech website, it talks about the Benetech Initiative, and it sounds like we're talking technology merging with entrepreneurism, but could you kind of break it down a little bit further for us? What is the Benetech Initiative?
Well, Benetech is the name of our nonprofit, and we call it the Benetech Initiative to cover, you know, that's basically the operating name that we're using for all the different projects that we're doing. And then each project acquires its own name, because we learned from the Arkenstone experience, we don't want to have our base nonprofit have the same name as our different projects, which is why Bookshare.org is different than Martis, which will be different than Sonoris or some of the other handheld products that we come up with. And what we are is we're sort of a cross between a Silicon Valley technology company, a nonprofit, a venture capital fund. So we roll all those together and incubate these projects that we're excited about. So at any one point in time, we're kicking around at least 10 different project concepts, working on 5 projects that are funded. And the plan for each one is, all right, we're going to put some money into this project, and we're going to bring it through its first couple of years. And at the end of, let's say, 3 years, the revenues it generates should be enough to keep it going. We don't necessarily have to make back the investment we use to create, you know, a given project. But it definitely has to get to the point where it's self-supporting. And that's really the Arkenstone model. Arkenstone ran right at break-even for 10 years, for more than 10 years. So we are trying to replicate that model in a handful of new projects that serve people in disadvantaged communities, and most particularly people with disabilities.
Let's talk about Bookshare now. What is Bookshare, and tell us how it came about? It's a kind of unique story about Napster involved and all that, too.
Yeah, we describe it as a cross between Napster, Amazon.com, and the Library of Congress Talking Books program, but legal. And the original idea came to me when my teenage son had a friend who lived 2 doors down, and it turns out that this friend of his mother was the acting CEO of Napster. And so thanks to this friendship, a copy of Napster ended up on our home computer late in 1999, and I looked at it, and I played with it, and my son and I spent an hour, you know, playing different music tunes. I said, boy, this is so cool. It's so illegal. It's so cool. And so we did a little bit of digging, because I thought that the analogy between people sharing music was very close to something I knew Arkenstone users wanted to do, which was share the books that they were scanning. There's no good reason why people should have to scan the same book over and over again, that every different person who has a scanning system has to go out to scan the book themselves and invest that 3 or 4 hours. So it turns out that the Chafee Amendment and the copyright law that was passed in 1996, really to help out RFB&D and the Library of Congress and APH and some of the different, you know, traditional producers of books, was written in such a way that it made a web-based electronic book venture, such as we were contemplating, actually legal. And so we did the homework. We talked to the publishers. We talked to the Library of Congress and RFB&D, and we put together the plan for Bookshare.org and got it going last year.
One of the things that you had to do in the beginning was talk to the publishing companies. When you tell them what you wanted to do, what were their initial reactions, and what is your relationship with these publishing companies today, Jim?
Well, the initial reaction was nobody ever came to talk to us before they started using our material. And we went to them a full year in advance of launching Bookshare.org. And I think they really appreciated the fact that we didn't spring it on them and say, here it is, but instead that we went to them. And we described a 7-point digital rights management plan that we intended to implement, so that the social bargain between the publishing industry and the blindness community would be upheld, which is the publishers are really for disability access as long as their regular commercial interests aren't significantly damaged. And so they were concerned that books would come out of Bookshare.org and go to everybody without a disability for free, and that that would undercut their book sales. And so what we've done is, and it's kind of an unusual approach, the traditional approach to protecting content is to try to lock it up 6 different ways and make it very hard to copy it or send it around. And we didn't do that. What happens when a Bookshare user gets a book is that they can put in their name and password, unlock the book, and it comes completely out of the locked box that it arrives in. And the person can put it in a Braille display, you know, or note taker, can print it out in Braille, can print it out in large print, can listen to it, can turn it into an MP3 file. But the deal is that they've promised us that they're not going to share it with people who don't qualify. They're going to work through Bookshare if they want to pass the book on to somebody else. And the great thing is that our Bookshare.org community members, our users, are respecting that. And so we're not having piracy problems or complaints from the publishers that books are leaking out of Bookshare.org. And one of the other things we do, and we tell our users this, is that we fingerprint and bookmark our books. So even though we don't lock them up, we do mark them both explicitly and secretly to make it hard for someone to cover the fact that if the book shows up for free on the Internet, that, we'll be able to figure out who it came from.
We'll find you. We'll find you and track you down, is what you're saying.
Yeah, and we take it seriously. And I think the publishers feel that the fact that we take their intellectual property seriously at the same time that we take the right of access seriously is what gives them confidence that we'll work through any issues. And we are in touch with the General Counsel of the Publishing Industry Association at least once a calendar quarter. Anytime we do anything new, we let them know. We kind of give them a chance to give us some feedback. So our big goal is that we don't want to surprise the publishing industry, and I'd say that our relationships are very strong there. And one of the great things that's happened recently is that a major computer book publisher gave us worldwide rights to all of their books to distribute to disabled people around the world. And we think that's the first step of hopefully quite a number of other publishers joining them and saying, hey, it's better to work with Bookshare.org and make access easier. We're not going to be hurt or damaged by cooperating with this accessibility initiative.
You talked a minute ago about the copyright exemption that you discovered. Talk about that briefly and how you're putting that to use with Bookshare.
Okay, the copyright law is actually, it's in the base U.S. federal copyright law, and it says that a qualified nonprofit can provide copyrighted books in specialized formats to people with qualifying disabilities. So the we're a qualified nonprofit like RFB&D or NLS is the government agency. They also qualify. And we provide it in specialized formats, so we can't provide the books in ASCII or Microsoft Word or HTML. We have to provide them in the specialized format, and we use a digital braille format that Duxbury puts out called BRF, and then we use the new DAISY NISO digital talking book standard that is being adopted now by all the leading libraries for people with disabilities.
Let's talk about first sending you a book. Are they using, the people sending you these books, are they using any specialized software that makes it easy for them? And I guess because of your experience with OCR packages, are you telling them any special settings, tools, footnotes, or formats in order to get their book to you in an easy format?
Well, I think our first approach is, if you've already scanned the book, we'll take it in just about any format that you have it, as long as you scan the entire book. The only thing that we reject books for regularly is missing copyright information, because under the copyright law, we have to have the copyright notice in there. And so if it's not in the scanned book, then we can't make it. But so that means that we will accept books in, you know, the open book format, the Kurzweil formats, Microsoft Word, HTML, ASCII, RTF, and 5 or 10 others. So we're saying, if you've already got the book, please send it to us. We would rather have it the way you have it than not have it at all.
As long as they have the copyright information.
That's right. As long as they've scanned the whole book, including the copyright. If they are prospectively scanning a book and want to check in with us on how they can do the best possible job, we do have, you know, a suggestion on how to do that on our website. And basically what we're most excited about is getting original complete book scans in the open book or Kurzweil format or in RTF or DOC, the Microsoft Word format, because those are those have a lot of extra value to us in terms of pages and formatting and the like that we can use. And if someone has who's really glutton, we love it if they also scan the images of the pages and send those to us on a CD. That's how we operate our scanning systems here at Benetech, where we scan a good proportion of the books that go into Bookshare.org. And if we have the images, then when OCR packages get better, we'll be able to, you know, make them better over the years.
Now, is there an incentive for someone to send you a lot of books, monetary, or maybe you slice some price off the annual fee?
Exactly. We offer in-kind incentives for people to donate books. And roughly, if you donate between 20 or 30 scanned books a year, you get the membership for free.
That's not a bad deal.
No, and it's a labor of love, mainly. You're not doing this for the financial incentive, but it's nice to be recognized for that volunteer commitment. And we have a fair number of users who've, you know, given us hundreds or even in a couple cases, more than 1,000 books. And we're obviously delighted to find anyone who's got a big stash on their hard drive who wants to share it with the rest of the community.
One of the earliest questions that was raised about Bookshare was quality of product. Talk a bit about the master proofreaders you have, volunteers. How does this work? How do you make sure that you've got something? I know that since people are scanning and sending you books, you're not going to get the best, but how do you make sure you have at least a pretty good quality product when somebody sends you that and someone's ready to download your book?
Yeah, I think our original approach was we graded the quality of the books, we didn't do proofreading, and we expected that the quality would vary, and if it was below a certain point, we just wouldn't accept it. So it had to read quite, you know, reasonably well, but you still could have, let's say, our lowest quality setting, I think you could have a mistake every other line or something like that. And so we actually have, our quality is excellent, which means that it's been proofread. Good, which means, you know, is sort of an intermediate thing. Fair, which is this sort of mistake every other line. And then below that, we just don't put the books into the collection. One of the things that surprised us is the number of books that people are proofreading. And the I think that our latest number is the majority of books that people are submitting to us are proofread now. And also, the quality has been going up quite a bit because in the initial flurry, we got lots of books that were scanned 5 or 8 years ago. You know, from people who had very large collections, people who have been scanning a book a day for 10 years, that sort of thing. But now that people are scanning, knowing that they're going to submit it to Bookshare, scanning with the latest character recognition products, with the new scanners. For example, if we take a novel and put it through our high-speed scanners and OCR, it comes out excellent without any proofreading because that's a very easy thing to do. Now, if you're talking about a textbook that's got very complicated layout, we're still relying heavily on teachers and other volunteers to proofread those and clean them up, and that's a major new area of effort for us is textbooks.
Let's talk about receiving a book. I would assume since you're using the special exemption to the copyright law that you've got to prove your disability. If that is the case, how hard or difficult or easy is it to do that? What do you require them to do?
Our requirements are very similar to Recording for the Blind Dyslexic in terms of there's a form that you get filled out by a doctor or you submit a doctor's form, something along those lines. One of the nice things that Library of Congress arranged for us is if someone's already registered with NLS, they can just send us an email saying, here's my name and address and the library, you know, the affiliated library that I use for getting talking books, and NLS will send us back an email within a week or 10 days saying, yes, this person's already registered. And if they're already registered with NLS, then they don't have to submit any other proof. So people, I'd say the majority of our users go the email and NLS route, and that avoids having to find or get a form out and get someone to sign it.
So once they prove their disability, how much does it cost to sign up for the program, and then how do they get their account and their password?
Okay, so you basically go to our website and you agree to our contract, which is mainly thou shalt not send copies around freely to other people and behave yourself sort of contract, but it's all in legal language. And then you actually get your account and your password. Then you provide us with proof of disability either through NLS or through getting the form. And then the last thing you do is you pay us your subscription fee, which is $75 for the first year and $50 a year thereafter by mainly people are using credit cards. And when you go through all three steps, then your account gets enabled to download copyrighted books.
So,
but even at that moment, even before you go through all those steps, you can, for instance, volunteer and submit books to us. It's just you have to actually have gone through all three steps to download the copyrighted books for your own use.
So once we get all that done, and we're set up, then how does somebody unzip a book and download it into their system, like myself using a screen reader like Windows or Jaws? How does that work?
Okay. Several different options, but I'll describe the base option. Is you get your password, and we give you two pieces of software. We give you something we call the Unpack tool, which is a simple unzip utility, and we give you a Victor ReaderSoft version that reads Bookshare books aloud. So it's actually a DAISY ebook reader software package that is self-voicing. So what most of our users would do is using their screen reader, they would go to the Bookshare.org site, they would type in an author name or a title keyword, and they would get a list of books by that author or under that title. And then they would pick the book they want, and then if they want to go and download it and it's copyrighted, it asks them to put in their password. And then it's like downloading a file off the Internet. You save it into a directory. And then at the end of the download, you say, yeah, go ahead and open it. The Unpack tool will automatically come up, and it'll ask you again for your password. And then it will unpack the book and put it in your library directory.
So
then Victor ReaderSoft will come up, and it will find the new book, and then you'll begin reading it. Now, alternatively, if you don't choose to use the Victor ReaderSoft, you could use a lot of different pieces of software. You could read it in Microsoft Word or Internet Explorer, or you could download it into your Roadrunner or into your Braille Note or your whatever product.
So I don't have to use the Victor. I can just download it into WindowEyes?
That's right. Well,
I mean, Internet Explorer using WindowEyes.
WindowEyes,
right?
Would make some other product that could read it, like Internet Explorer or Microsoft Word,
right?
Speak.
But I could use Internet Explorer like 5.56 with WindowEyes to get this thing to me, right?
That's right. It will work just fine. The one thing that you miss when you go into Internet Explorer is that web pages put the whole book in as one giant long page.
Oh.
And, and that's the benefit of the DAISY format, among many other things, is it has better navigation oriented towards book reading. So you can go to page 231.
If I'm using the DAISY software, do I then want to turn off WindowEyes?
Yeah, and you know, WindowEyes has some settings where it'll automatically stop speaking, or you could turn off the voice in Victor and use WindowEyes. You have all those choices.
Right. And how would that work, I guess, briefly with someone using a refreshable browser on their system? Same kind of thing?
Well, that's the way that people have been using Bookshare, is they have the file on their hard drive as, and often they'll download it as a BRF file instead of a DAISY, but either way it works. And then they just go ahead and put the file into their Braille display, and then it'll be, you know, they can carry it around. One of the latest announcements that we made at the CSUN conference was that the Braille Note from Pulse Data Humanware now has the ability to directly go to our website using a modem and download books directly into the product without having a PC.
Are they further along with that at this point?
Well, that part of the release is done, and I think that they're busy trying to get it out in the next month, because it's a software update where the Bookshare part is one of, you know, three or four major upgrades. So.
And did you say earlier you're working with Freedom Scientific with the PacMate too?
We're certainly talking to them, and I know that Open Book is starting to also have some functionality like that. For example, the Kurzweil 1000 can go directly to our website, download books, and unpack them all without leaving the K1000.
You talked a little bit ago about digital rights management, and you talked a little bit about the encryption process, but without giving away all the trade secrets, how are you doing that? And you talked earlier about, okay, we found this person, we finger marked their book, and we know that you put it on the Internet. Talk about that and how your system can determine if somebody violated the terms of the Bookshare agreement.
Well, I mean the ways we mark the books are both explicit and hidden, and so I'm not going to tell you how we do the hidden parts, but the explicit ones are really easy. In the introductory period, it says, you know, this book was downloaded by Jim Fruchterman, number, blah. And so if I don't delete that part, then obviously they'll know exactly where it came from. But we also put in things that you would have to actually process the book pretty extensively to get rid of our marks. So we need to say, you know, don't bother. just obey the deal. And what a lot of people do is they actually edit the books as they read them, and if they have errors, they fix them, and then they contribute them back to Bookshare, and then we improve the version that's in our library, so the next person will get a proofread version.
Can someone preview Bookshare without paying the fee? If someone would say, you know, I don't know if I want to use this service or not, can they take a look at your titles and kind of play with this before saying, okay, I got to sign up and spend the $75?
People can do that several different ways. First of all, you can go to our website today and see all the books that we have. So it's only when you actually want to go to download the book will you actually be asked for a password. So you can see what books we have, whether they're rated excellent, good, or fair, and, you know, a brief synopsis of a lot of the books. And so anyone can do that. About a little bit less than a third of our collection is public domain. Maybe it's now a quarter. So, but about a quarter of our books are public domain, and they're free. In other words, anybody can download them anywhere in the world. And these are, in many cases, books that are available through Project Gutenberg. I'd say most of them, you know, are the Gutenberg books. So these are books that are at least 80 years old, are no longer covered by copyright, and so anyone can check those books out and see how they like them.
Jim, where do you see yourself involved in such things as e-book and web braille and even NLS getting digital talking book going? Where do you see Bookshare and all that whole marketplace?
Well, we see ourselves as the R&D lab for this sector. You know, we're smaller, we're more technically oriented than technology is mainly what we do as opposed to one of the pieces of how we carry things out. And so, for example, we've had, you know, a really good relationship with NLS. They're doing cataloging data for Bookshare so that they can add the Bookshare collection into the Union catalog. And that's really helpful to us because they have professional librarians and we don't. And so they get the cataloging data right and like. So I think that, you know, we believe that most of the groups in the field are going to end up doing something like Bookshare.org over the coming years. I think the actual dream is that you'll get your books electronically rather than through the mail, that the books will come, if there's an audio version, you'll get the full text and the full audio, and hopefully with descriptions of the graphics. And that's, you know, a vision of where the world should be, and I think as time goes on, it would be even great if we didn't need a Bookshare.org because all publishers, you know, created accessible versions of their books, of their e-books. And, since they're not, that's why there needs to be a bookshare.org. And I think one of the surprising things to us was how many of the electronic books that are available commercially are actually locked out for blind people to use. So we also are advocates against that particular policy. And George Kircher of Recording for the Blind, Dyslexic, and I wrote a paper called The Soundproof Book last year documenting this particular problem and trying to talk to policymakers about why publishers shouldn't do this.
You talked with me off air, I think it was Tuesday, about the work you're doing in Canada and the United Kingdom. Talk about that for a minute real quickly, sir.
Well, I think that Canada and the UK and other countries have similar laws to our law, and we would like to have Bookshare.org be available to the people in those countries, and also the blind people in those countries are bugging us about this. So we've made proposals to different countries about setting up Bookshare.orgs in their countries and working together for publishers to give us worldwide rights that we could share in each of our different countries so people can access more books. So I think that's a direction that we're really excited about, and we think it will enhance the range of books that are available to people here in the U.S.
What do you think it's going to take to get some kind of a universal law that would allow blind people all over the world to share books? Because it doesn't make any sense, at least to me, that I can read a book in the U.S. as a blind, visually impaired person, but that same blind, visually impaired person in, say, New Zealand doesn't have rights to those books. Is it a case of the copyright law was written before the technology? How do we break this barrier, Jim?
Well, that's a challenge that has to do with the way copyright law tends to work right now. Right now, it's a nation-by-nation law, and every law is different. And so if we want to bring books to people with disabilities in 60 different countries, either we go out and we research what each of those 60 countries does legally and jump through different hoops in each country, or we go to the publisher and say, would you please give us worldwide rights? So I think that the only thing that will change this is if access to information becomes a human right under some of the international conventions, human rights conventions, and there are people working on that. I know there are members of the DAISY Consortium that are working in this sort of international organization area to say, let's put access to information for, say, people who are blind or people who are into the list of social and economic rights that are advocated for, and then we can have a club to work on countries to say, you know, open up, you know, put something in your law that allows people to share among different countries. But, you know, I'm not a lobbyist, and so I'm a technologist. So we'll be there when the advocates call on us to advise on those things, but mainly we build things, and we're focusing on that.
What do you see then when someone would come to you and say, well, that's okay and fine, but how do we protect my country's books?
Well, I mean, one thing that we do is we say, well, we'd be glad to run Bookshare.org for your country or license you the code, and you can do exactly what we're doing here in the U.S. And that's the substance of the proposals we've made to some of these other countries. And to some extent, it doesn't matter to us whether they license our code and do it or if they reinvent it themselves and maybe make some improvements. We might learn from that. So I think the real goal is how do we increase access, and we think that electronic book access is fundamentally so much less expensive than other forms. I mean, it costs us less than $30 to add a book to our collection. It probably costs a traditional audiobook producer more than $3,000. That's a factor of 100 difference. What that means is that we can afford to add books to our collection that no one else could afford to touch because it's so much cheaper for us. And as people move in that direction, people with vision impairments aren't going to have access to 5% of the books that are out there, but 95% of the books.
You've talked about the benefits of Bookshare. Can you give us one or two reasons that someone should sign up for the service that hasn't signed up so far?
I think that the main reasons are you get books that you've never seen before. You get books faster, both from the date of publication, and also you can have the book in less than 3 minutes from when you decide you want to go get it. And lastly, I think there's a real benefit to the full text of a book and with the navigation, both being able to hop to the page you want instantly, but also to be able to search and operate in Braille, basically choose the way you want the book to be displayed to you in the way that you can best use it. So those are Bookshare's key advantages, and of course, we're not very expensive.
Wrapping this up, what do you want to see happen with Bookshare in the next 6 months to a year, Jim?
I would like to see our user base grow from roughly 1,000 to 5,000. I'd like to see our books go from 12,500 to over 20,000. I'd like to see our range of textbooks that are available for students explode. Thanks to working with a lot of different schools and colleges. So those are our major goals.
And if someone wanted to sign up for Bookshare, give us a website for that. And if someone wants to talk with you, email and a phone for you.
Okay, great. You can basically our website is www.bookshare.org. And you can send email to me at president@benetech.org. And our phone number is one for the U.S., 650-475-5440.
Jim, thank you so much. We appreciate it. That's Jim Futcherman. I'm Jim Layton, and this is Radio Information Service in Belleville, Illinois.